If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And I want to talk mainly today about IG Farben, the chemical and industrial cartel that was created in the interwar years, and its relationship to Nazism and its involvement and punishment for the Holocaust, involvement in the Holocaust and punishment. And so one of the reasons why I want to talk about this is because there are many very interesting things that are revealed by the trial of IG Farben executives in 1947. It's the last trial of the Nuremberg era, the Nuremberg trials, and it's the one where the question of the Jews really comes up as a significant issue. Prior to this, the main focus of the trials was prosecuting senior Nazis like Hermann Göring for the crime of unprovoked and planned war, and being able to suggest that the IG Farben executives were complicit in a planned war, it was very difficult. Their defence was quite straightforward, that they were a chemical industry, much like Britain's ICI or America's Standard Oil, and they had participated no more and no less in the defence of Germany and Germany's military goals than anybody else had. However, it was the work of American military investigators that presented IG Farben as having benefited from slave labour, mainly Jewish. And the IG Farben plant, Auschwitz-Monowitz, which if you ever take the drive to Auschwitz, you can see the twin chimneys of Monowitz still working. It's still an active chemical plant site. On your left-hand side on the road from Krakow to Oświęcim. At this site were the Bühnewerks, the synthetic rubber works that the Nazis were very enthusiastic about, because Bühne was going to be a way of dealing with the shortages that the German army faced, particularly in rubber, which is obviously essential for tyres and tracks and aircraft. Bühne could be created from the coal of the Silesia region and the large quantities of water that were available. One of the reasons for situating the Auschwitz complex where it is are these environmental factors, the fact that there are these raw materials there. Monowitz itself is a couple of kilometres from Auschwitz I, the main concentration camp, and Auschwitz-Birkenau, the death camp. And the region was dotted with a whole series of dozens of sub-camps and smaller labour units. There was a prison camp on site at Monowitz. And so the evidence that the IG Farben had exploited slave labour, firstly to build Monowitz and then to staff it, was pretty damning. Most famous Holocaust memorialist and writer, Primo Levi, was imprisoned in Monowitz. He writes that Monowitz actually saved his life because he was by trade a chemist, and the SS discovered this when he arrived at Auschwitz. He eventually was able to spend the winter inside Monowitz, where it was relatively warm, whilst other inmates froze to death outside in the cold. Now, the book that's been most instructive on this subject is Dermot Jeffries' Hell's Cartel, which is a brilliantly and forensically researched piece of writing on the industrialists' trial and on IG Farben itself. Towards the end of the 19th century, as Britain's competitive advantage in the Industrial Revolution had started to ebb away, Germany and America snap at the heels of the British, and the way in which the Germans do it is through their chemicals industry. They're chemists in terms of dyes, fertilisers, paints, explosives, and every other major part of synthetic chemicals that we use today were streaks ahead of their British counterparts. The sciences, particularly the scientists and the science students that Germany was able to produce in the late 19th century were far superior to that of anywhere else in Europe. The First World War was the point at which the chemical industry in Germany and the government became deeply linked and interconnected, as was the case in every other country in Europe. The need, not so much for poison gas, though gas is something that Germany's chemical industry certainly provided, but for high explosives for artillery shells, was made the chemicals industry indispensable. And Germany's chemical industry, after the signing of the Treaty of Versailles, was an immense target, not just for the French, but for the Americans. French engineers marched into the Reich, essentially, and took apart chemical plants with carte blanche to do so, under the agreements signed at the Treaty of Versailles and the various punishing clauses that Germany was forced to adhere to. But it was the United States that was far more savvy, and the United States demanded patents. They demanded patents for their industries of German goods, German inventions, German discoveries. So patents for things like aspirin, and patents for fertilisers were shipped across the Atlantic, and this was part of essentially America's reward for participating in the war. There's a body of evidence, really, if you can read Adam Tooze's The Deluge on Woodrow Wilson, and it rather dispels the myth of him being a crusader for liberal causes, in as much as he was a crusader for American commercial and mercantile causes. The merger of eight smaller, yet extremely powerful and successful chemical companies in 1925 into IG Farben, including Bayer, Hoechst, BASF, and Agfa, was creating a kind of pool of 100,000 workers, was really a kind of a response to the economic crisis that Germany's plunged into after the war, and also the loss of world markets that the chemical industry in Germany had endured as a result of the Treaty of Versailles and the loss of the war. I.G. Farben had all sorts of connections to chemical businesses around the world, including Standard Oil, and American industry was able to, and when hostilities begin during the Second World War, was able to snap up IG Farben subsidiaries in the USA for a song. The conglomerate had a complicated relationship with Hitler, mainly based on pragmatism. They had supported all sorts of different causes of the right and the centre-right during the Weimar era, and mainly they'd done so in what they viewed as the interests of good business. They didn't want the SPD or, heaven forbid, the communists to come to power, because this would lead to expropriations of property and workers' rights being sacrosanct. And the decision to fund the Nazis and to give donations along with companies like Krupp was based in part due to a meeting that industrialists were called to in 1932, where Hitler essentially said, unless we have the resources to seize power, to electorally seize power, and to have myself appointed as Reich Chancellor, there'll be a civil war in this country, which, as you can imagine, gentlemen, will be very bad for business. And following that, the checkbooks come out. The advent of anti-Semitic policies by the regime is something that IG Farben could undoubtedly have not been naive about the prospect of. And yet when they arrive, it's a significant problem. The IG Farben have a large number of Jewish scientists and engineers and technicians and specialists. And Karl Bosch, the chairman of IG Farben, approached Hitler directly on this subject. They were discussing many things at the Reich Chancellery, and then Hitler exploded into rage, ranting at Karl Bosch, when Bosch has temerity to ask about whether he would be permitted to reinstate Jewish scientists, that Germany will exist for 100 years or more without chemistry or physics, if necessary. If you read Timothy Snyder's Black Earth, these comments make a lot more sense. Hitler is somebody who places, obviously, racial ideology above all things, above politics, above science, above economics, above anything. And racial purity and racial struggle to him just simply are more important than the needs of science. If Germany has to be without science for a century, then so be it. The sheer ludicrousness of this position, you don't really need to kind of go into too much. It's a rather a fish in a barrel scenario. And later on, of course, Hitler is hugely reliant on what IG Farben can create for him, but by which time it has been completely purged of Jews. And Jewish scientists who managed to survive selection in the camps often would find themselves working at Monowitz, just as Primo Levi did, and their skills being exploited as they were slowly starved. Their lifespans would be slightly longer than that of the normal prisoner, but not enormously so. As the war progresses, managers at IG Farben's Buna site at Monowitz become progressively more and more hungry for Jewish labour. The working relationship between the SS and between IG Farben managers becomes very, very cozy, and complicit, and to some extent seamless. Slave labour was not free as far as IG Farben was concerned. IG Farben had to pay a premium per prisoner sent to them via the SS. And so the SS...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Found all sorts of ways of making money from the situation, of which a certain amount was stolen and embezzled and wind themselves in the pockets of individual SS men, while the rest made its way back to the Reich. As with any slave trade, it was highly lucrative. Now, obviously, the conglomerate IG Farben isn't the SS. And it might have been realistic to expect, at least from a pragmatic point of view, an interest in feeding and clothing prisoners. Workers with a sufficient amount of calories are more able to work and to do things without dropping them, making mistakes, etc., etc. But there's no evidence from IG Farben of any interest in prisoner welfare whatsoever. The suspicion and the potential wrath of the SS is one explanation for this, but also that can't be the only possible reason for this disinterest. The prisoners in the eyes of the staff were utterly dehumanised. They had become quite accustomed to viewing them as non-sentient units of, or, you know, of the manufacturing process of you know, manufacturing inputs and little more. And the deaths of workers, or their return to later on to Auschwitz-Birkenau for gassing when it was they were no longer of any use, was a routine part of the working week. In addition to this, the staff at Auschwitz Monowitz and by on the site, on the factory site, there is also a prison camp, would have been quite happy to witness all manner of SS sadism and no doubt indulge in some of it themselves. It was the meeting of the conglomerate and Heinrich Himmler, who became a real enthusiast of the economic purposes to which prisoners could be put, which really is quite a pivotal moment in the story of IG Farben. IG Farben's one of their subsidiaries, Degesch, was the company that developed the Zyklon B pellet. Zyklon B had been used as a pesticide. It was used as a delouser of Mexican agricultural workers in the United States, for example. And when used in particularly low quantities, it could delouse clothes and even delouse individuals without necessarily killing them. The potential that could be gained from, in the eyes of Himmler, from the industrial killing of large numbers of people from something like Zyklon B was in keeping with the way in which Himmler viewed the problem of Jewry in Europe anyway. To him, the language that the Nazis used was that of a pestilence, of a disease, of something that needed to be treated, to be disinfected. The fact that the SS employed large numbers of doctors and the SS were very keen on what they viewed as being medicine, not just to be applied to the individual, but to be applied to what, to the racial body, showed that they were the Nazis viewed their role, particularly the SS and Himmler, viewed their role as the surgeons that were treating a sick racial body and removing a disease, a bacillus or some kind of infestation from it. And the IG Farben provided exactly the medicine, if you will, that Himmler, believed needed to be applied. The Buna Works were one of the few significant Allied targets in the Auschwitz complex during the war. 1943 onwards, the existence of the Holocaust is well known, and Churchill and Roosevelt make various speeches in Parliament and the Houses of Congress, saying that Nazi war criminals will be brought to justice, and but that's a kind of about as far as it goes in terms of doing something about the Holocaust. Both Churchill and Roosevelt, this is an argument brought forward by Tony Judd in a couple of his books, both Churchill and Roosevelt were mindful that anti-Semites in Britain and America would seize on the opportunity to decry a war being fought in the interests of the Jews if the camps were bombed, you know, particularly if Allied planes were shot down and Allied airmen died in trying to blow up railway lines and that kind of thing to Auschwitz. And so for that reason, and for the reason laid down by various Allied air chief marshals, who looked upon it as a strategic diversion, the camps were largely avoided. I always wonder whether the view of Bomber Command and of the US 8th Air Force of it being strategic diversion are entirely valid. There were a number of, shall we say, pet projects that were pioneered by both sides, which were real sideshows, which could arguably have been abandoned in favour of doing something about the railway lines to the camps, which always, and this alone makes me wonder whether the Judd thesis on impact on latent anti-Semitism in Britain and America might have been something that influenced Churchill and Roosevelt. Anyway, suffice to say, Monowitz is a target for Allied bombing. On the 20th of August, heavy bombing raids launched against Monowitz, and as you can imagine, it was the German Monowitz workers who scrambled into the air raid shelters, leaving the Jewish prisoners to bear the brunt of the bombs. Primo Levi writes, "When the earth began to tremble, we dragged ourselves stunned and limping through the corrosive fumes of the smoke bombs to the vast waste areas, sordid and sterile, closed within the boundary of the Buna. There we lay inert, piled up on top of each other like dead men, but still aware of the momentary pleasure of our bodies resting." British prisoners of war who were stationed nearby, some of whom were also used as slave labour, were killed. 40 British servicemen were killed in the American bombing. But it was the August raid that really put an end to Monowitz being able to produce synthetic fuel or rubber. And by January 1945, of course, on January 27, 1945, the Red Army marched in to Auschwitz, liberating the camps and showing the world what the Germans had done in Silesia. Now, when it comes to the war crimes trials after the war, the Nuremberg trials, the American military prosecutors seem to have been more dogged than virtually anybody else in pursuing the guilty. For them, the British, who seemed almost slightly half-hearted. In some ways, Britain looked at the prospect of governing and denazifying its zones of occupation with real horror. It's extremely expensive, and money was one thing that Britain lacked. And so there was some degree of a lack of political will. But that doesn't seem to be the case with the United States. The British were very keen to make sure that denazification was a more selective process, because they needed German administrators of every hue very quickly to be working in their zones of occupation. Now, as mentioned at the start of the podcast, the IG trial, the industrialists' trial, came last. And the it ran from 1947 into 1948. The industrialists are very skilled at defending themselves. The defendant, one of the defendants, Carl Crouch, said, "Replace IG by ICI for England, or DuPont for America, or Mentecatini for Italy, and once the similarity will become clear to you," meaning that all we are simply just businessmen and industrialists, and we just did as we were told, and we supplied our country with what it needed, and really that's no better or worse than anything anybody else did. And the American prosecutors are stumped by this for a while, until they begin to look into the question of slave labour. Because the trial did not begin with the question of slavery, the cases against them was somewhat weakened. However, the introduction of the charge of slavery and profiteering from slave labour is the one that sticks, really. For example, when one of the witnesses, the Norwegian Jewish prisoner Kai Feinberg, gave his testimony, he said, "We unloaded boxcars, iron poles and bags containing cement, as well as heavy ovens. On the 5th of January 1943, my father was already so weakened that when we had to drag a 50-kilogram bag at double pace, he collapsed before my very eyes. He was carried to the camp by his comrades. He had been beaten constantly by the guards, and most severely on the last day. He died in my presence on the 7th of January 1943. One of my father's brothers injured his right arm during work, and he was gassed. His other brother became so weak that he died while at work, about 1 or 2 weeks after my father in Buna. I myself was able to stand the work until the 15th of January 1943. Then I contracted pneumonia." And so that kind of testimony really was the thing that damned the IG Farben executives. Though the prison sentences they received were between 4 and 8 years. So nobody served more than a decade in prison. And most were rehabilitated and disappeared into the ranks of West German economic and financial elite status shortly after they were released. So there was really, as so often the case with these things, very little justice for anybody. But the significance of the industrialists' trial is that this is one of the first moments that the question of the war and the question of the Holocaust become intertwined. Obviously, we now know that these things are fundamentally and inextricably connected, but in the post-war climate, this connection was rarely made when the British showed footage of the liberation of Belsen. The word Jews is never used. Prisoners. They were referred to as prisoners. And so the idea that the Nazis had not only committed an act of a war of planned aggression and of premeditated conquest, but they had also perpetrated at the same time a genocide, begins, the seed of this really begins in public consciousness in 1947 and 1948 with the industrialist trap. So that's why it's important. Anyway, thanks for listening, and apologies everyone for the kind of fortnight break. I've been away for a little while, and I'll be adding the forthcoming book review on women's history in the next couple of days. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.